Hello, hello, hello. Here's Marlenka with another episode from Sri Aurobindo Synthesis of Yoga. Hatha Yoga attains large results, but at an exorbitant price and to very little purpose. But Raja Yoga takes a higher flight. It aims at the liberation and perfection, not of the bodily, but of the mental being, the control of the emotional and sensational life, the mastery of the whole apparatus of thought and consciousness. It fixes its eyes on the citta, that stuff of mental consciousness in which all these activities arise, and it seeks, even as Hatha Yoga with its physical material, first to purify and to tranquilize. The normal state of man is a condition of trouble and disorder, a kingdom either at war with itself or badly governed. For the Lord, the Purusha, is subjected to his ministers, the faculties, subjected even to his subjects, the instruments of sensation, emotion, action, enjoyment. Swaraja, self-rule, must be substituted for this subjection. First, therefore, the powers of order must be helped to overcome the powers of disorder. The preliminary movement of Raja Yoga is a careful self-discipline by which good habits of mind are substituted for the lawless movements that indulge the lower nervous being. By the practice of truth, by renunciation of all forms of egoistic seeking, by abstention from injury to others, by purity, by constant meditation, inclination to the divine Purusha, who is the true Lord of the mental kingdom, a pure and glad, clear state of mind and heart will be established. But this is the first step only. Afterwards, the ordinary activities of the mind and sense must be entirely quieted in order that the soul may be free to ascend to higher states of consciousness and acquire the foundation for a perfect freedom and self-mastery. But Raja Yoga does not forget that the disabilities of the ordinary mind proceed largely from its subjection to the reactions of the nervous system and the body. It adopts, therefore, from the Hatha Yogic system, its devices of asana and pranayama, but reduces their multiple and elaborate forms in each case to one simplest and most directly effective process sufficient for its own immediate object. Thus, it gets rid of the Hatha Yoga complexity and cumbrousness, while it utilizes the swift and powerful efficacy of its methods for the control of the body and the vital functions, and for the awakening of that internal dynamism, full of a latent supernormal faculty, typified in yogic terminology by Kundalini, the coiled, sleeping serpent of energy within. This done, the system proceeds to the perfect quieting of the restless mind and its elevation to a higher plane through concentration of mental force by the successive stages which lead to the utmost inner concentration or ingathered state of the consciousness, which is called samadhi. By samadhi, in which the mind acquires the capacity of withdrawing from its limited waking activities into freer and higher states of consciousness, Raja Yoga serves a double purpose. It encompasses a pure mental action, liberated from the confusions of the outer consciousness, and passes thence to the higher supramental planes on which the individual soul enters into its true spiritual existence. But also, it acquires the capacity of that free and concentrated energizing of consciousness on its object, which our philosophy asserts as the primary cosmic energy and the method of divine action upon the world. By this capacity, the yogin, already possessed of the highest supracosmic knowledge and experience in the state of trance, is able in the waking state to acquire directly whatever knowledge and exercise, whatever mastery may be useful or necessary to his activities in the objective world. For the ancient system of Raja Yoga aimed not only at Swarajya, self-rule or subjective empire, the entire control by the subjective consciousness of all the states and activities proper to its own domain, but included Samrajya as well, outward empire, the control by the subjective consciousness of its outer activities and environment. We perceive that as Hatha Yoga, dealing with the life and body, aims at the supernormal perfection of the physical life and its capacities, and goes beyond it into the domain of the mental life, so Raja Yoga, operating with the mind, aims at a supernormal perfection and enlargement of the capacities of the mental life, and goes beyond it into the domain of the spiritual existence. But the weakness of the system lies in its excessive reliance on abnormal states of trance. This limitation leads first to a certain aloofness from the physical life, which is our foundation and the sphere into which we have to bring our mental and spiritual gains. Especially is the spiritual life in this system too much associated with the state of samadhi. Our object is to make the spiritual life and its experiences fully active and fully utilizable in the waking state and even in the normal use of the functions. But in Raja Yoga, it tends to withdraw into a subliminal plane at the back of our normal experiences instead of descending and possessing our whole existence. The triple path of devotion, knowledge, and works attempts the province which Raja Yoga leaves unoccupied. It differs from Raja Yoga in that it does not occupy itself with the elaborate training of the whole mental system as the condition of perfection, but seizes on certain central principles, the intellect, the heart, the will, and seeks to convert their normal operations by turning them away from their ordinary and external preoccupations and activities and concentrating them on the divine. It differs also in this, and here from the point of view of an integral yoga there seems to be a defect, that it is indifferent to mental and bodily perfection and aims only at purity as a condition of the divine realization. A second defect is that, as actually practiced, it chooses one of the three parallel paths exclusively and almost in antagonism to the others, instead of effecting a synthetic harmony of the intellect, the heart, and the will in an integral divine realization. The path of knowledge aims at the realization of the unique and supreme self. It proceeds by the method of intellectual reflection, vichara, to right discrimination, viveka. It observes and distinguishes the different elements of our apparent or phenomenal being, and rejecting identification with each of them, arrives at their exclusion and separation in one common term as constituents of prakriti, of phenomenal nature, creations of maya, the phenomenal consciousness. So, it is able to arrive at its right identification with the pure and unique self, which is not mutable or perishable, not determinable by any phenomenon or combination of phenomena. From this point, the path, as ordinarily followed, leads to the rejection of the phenomenal worlds from the consciousness as an illusion, and the final emergence without return of the individual soul in the Supreme. But this exclusive consummation is not the sole or inevitable result of the path of knowledge. Followed more largely and with a less individual aim, the method of knowledge may lead to an active conquest of the cosmic existence for the divine no less than to a transcendence. So the point of this departure is the realization of the Supreme Self not only in one's own being, but in all beings. And finally, the realization of even the phenomenal aspects of the world as a play of the divine consciousness and not something entirely alien to its true nature. We will pause for now for this episode and continue in the next week. We hope that you realize a little light in this listening. Until next time, Mylanka signing off.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the City of Dome.